I really don't need to know today.
That we're on. So, welcome. This is Senate Interim Committee on General Government and Accountability, and I'm going to open that. And first thing on the agenda today is an informational meeting on public records overview, and we have Suzanne Trujillo to join us to help us through that. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Okay. Can you hear me okay? Okay. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Suzanne Trujillo, and I'm from Legislative Council. I'm Deputy Legislative Council there, and one of my drafting areas and general tasks is public records. So I draft legislation in public records, and I also handle the public records requests that come into the legislative branch. So Adam let me know that you wanted me to give a quick presentation about public records in general. So I was going to just kind of do a quick overview and then at the end take questions, comments, that sort of thing, if that works. So public records law in Oregon was written about 40 years ago, and its intent was to be a law of disclosure. The general principle is that a record that reflects the conduct of the public's business is disclosable to the public. So for public bodies generally, which includes the Legislative Assembly and also the Judicial Department, ORS 192.410 defines a public record. And a public record is any writing that contains information relating to the conduct of the public's business and that is prepared, owned, used, or retained by a public body, regardless of the physical form or characteristics. So one of the important things here is that the record is in writing. That can mean on a piece of paper. It also means emails. It means electronically kept calendars. It means Word documents, that sort of thing. So not just a handwritten note. ORS 192.018 requires state agencies, but not the Legislative Assembly, to develop records retention policies for how they handle their records. These policies need to get approval from the state archivist. They're all available on the Secretary of State website under the Archives tab. It's a little bit separate from the Legislative Assembly. For the Legislative Assembly, retention policies are set out in the chamber rules. So the Senate Rule 1408 requires records of members and staff to be kept for 1 year after the date of creation of the record. So this, you can set up folders in your email, for example, that you clean out on a certain calendar, that sort of thing, to kind of manage your emails. But once a record comes in and it is prepared, so if you wrote it, it's owned, you have it, you used it for development of legislation, that sort of thing, or you just happen to keep it and it's connected to the public business, it becomes a public record and you have to keep it for a year. In the House, they just changed their rules, I believe, last session, and they now require records to be kept for 2 years after the date of creation. So a little difference there. I'm not quite sure on the reasons why, but just be aware that the Senate is 1 year retention policy. What we call ephemeral communications, so things like text messages or Skype or GChat, that sort of thing, those are public records if they do deal with the conduct of the public's business. So if the senators are texting back and forth about what to do about some bill or something that relates to the conduct of the public's business, that does become public record, but there's not a retention requirement for things that are considered ephemeral communications. So you take that as you will, I suppose. And then there are some exceptions to the legislative retention rules. These address certain financial documents. These are things that you need to keep for your statements of economic interest, and that's set out in the rules pretty clearly. So it's separate. Those tend to be 2 or 5 years, depending on the record. Questions so far? Am I I didn't really know quite what you had in mind in terms of this, so hopefully this is sort of going in the right direction.
Yeah, so what we had in mind, I think, is there's a lot of complaints about how we handle public records requests. And so one of the things I want to do over the course of looking at this is to figure out maybe what other states do. Is there some way we can handle it better within the law? Or maybe there needs to be some law changes. And I think that one of my goals, and I think probably the other members of the committee, although I won't speak for them, is that we should be as transparent as possible.
Okay.
And so my goal is to see if there is a better way that we can handle what we do as a state.
Okay, that's helpful. So I guess I'll talk a little bit more about our process, and then obviously it's up to you all to decide what to do from there. So quickly back to records. If a record is retained beyond the required retention period, so what the House or Senate requires, and then somehow becomes the subject of a public records request, that record needs to be kept. So say, for example, you have some emails from 2010. Obviously, that's beyond the one-year retention period at this point. But if you kept them and they deal with a subject that's suddenly the subject of a request and it happens to fall in a date range somebody's looking for, you have to keep those records until the request is completed. So even though they're outside the retention period, you can't just suddenly delete them once they're requested. And then back to the general principle, 192.420 provides the public right of inspection of records, and 192.440 requires that requests for public records come in some form of writing. So legislative administration has a form on the website that members of the public will often use, and another thing that's really common, especially with requests from media members, is just a direct email either to the legislator or often to me or to Dexter in our office.
So Senator Thatcher has a question.
Well, you know, I agree with the concept that we need to be as transparent as possible, but I also need to make sure we're being transparent on things that really matter. For instance, last session there was an individual asking for every legislator's newsletter list. I think they just wanted a free list so that they can also send out mail. Yeah. And to me, that is a violation of
privacy.
Yeah, essentially, you know, these are people that just agreed to take a newsletter from me, and me giving out that list to somebody else feels wrong to me. And that does not seem like that is a revelation or transparency of public business. That's just somebody using the system. And anyway, so I didn't feel good about doing that, but I do agree. On the other hand, we do need to be transparent when it comes to matters of public business, but I don't feel like that is a matter of public business. But I can see it being a matter of public business for a specific individual to find out, well, you know, maybe something blows up in the news and they're wondering, well, who all had interaction with this person and what was the extent of that interaction. I can see it in specific cases, but not on just a, you know,
just a global,
request of somebody's list.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Senator Thatcher, I completely agree with you. I think that's a really important point. And in the case that you gave, I guess my question would be, if that's about a specific issue, then that would be a request for the emails or whatever that are related to that specific issue, and those email addresses would then be disclosable and people know that. But if the issue is who I'm sending my e-newsletter to, that is not, I agree with you completely, because the issue is what's the content of that newsletter, and that's easy for anybody to find out.
That's easy.
Right? I'm happy to provide that to anybody who wants it, but that's the point. I like a big mailing list. So I think that's a really valid point. I do think we need a little more clarification about that very issue. What really qualifies as public
business?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of a, like many things in law, it's sort of a gray area. So with email lists, they're public record because what you're sending, so your newsletter, like we've decided, is public record. It's something that you obviously create for the public with the public's intent about the business you're doing as representatives of the public. And who that goes to is, I think of the best way to put this, it might require a little bit more maybe email follow-up to give you a better answer, but kind of who you're interacting with as a representative of the public is public business. And I do hear your concern about, you know, Sarah Smith from wherever writes in and asks to be on Senator Thatcher's email list, and she doesn't necessarily know when she's signing up that her email address might go to the public. So I hear the concern. It's kind of a tricky issue. So I don't have a definitive answer for you on that. But I guess something to...
If I may, Mr. Chair,
sure.
So how would we... I mean, what would need to happen to get that clarified? Because I think most members of the general public are not aware that by emailing me, they are then themselves at some level subject to public records. Not that their emails are, but that if I sent an email to John Q. Public, that's public record under the
right.
various rules that you've outlined, especially if it's an individual communication as opposed to a mass newsletter, right?
Right.
But I don't think that people expect that if they sign up for my newsletter that they're going to have their email address disclosed for no good reason, right? I don't think they would see that in the same way. Do we need legislation to clarify that?
I'd have to do a little bit more research to give you a definitive answer on that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but then it, you know, brings up the issue of public, what's in the public interest, and who gets to be the public when there's a public interest issue. So it's kind of this kind of undefinable, or at least at the moment undefined, kind of area. Yeah. So, and then I guess back to the process. So the law requires that a public body that receives a public records request respond to the requester as soon as practicable and without an unreasonable delay, which is not exactly a set timeline, but a thing that is set is that an elected member does have to respond to a requester within 7 days of receiving the request. So I think most of you have gotten public records requests before, and so you might be familiar with the acknowledgement letter that our office will send out to the requester. That works as a response, and it just says, we received your request, and we're working on it. So the 7 days doesn't necessarily mean that you have to complete the request and get all the records to the person within 7 days. It just means you have to acknowledge that the person has made this request. A new rule in the House, however, does require that if it looks like a public records request is not going to be completed within 21 days, that the House member provide completion estimates of a date of when that might be done. And then every 21 days after, if it's not done, that they provide another estimate. So it's not a completion, but kind of, I don't know, provides estimates. So, we've talked a little bit kind of about exemptions from disclosure just in terms of the email lists. Exemptions from disclosure are pretty concentrated in ORS Chapter 192. They're specifically in 192.501 and 502. Both of those contain big lists of exemptions from public records disclosure. There are many other exemptions that are in Chapter 192, but also scattered throughout ORS in general. Another place where they're pretty concentrated is in ORS Chapter 40. This contains the evidence code, and it also contains a list of privileges. So, for example, there's the lawyer-client privilege that's in Chapter 40, and this talks about material that's privileged, which is also exempt from public record. The difference between privileged material and confidential material, very basically, is that privileged material is not required to be produced even if there's a subpoena, whereas confidential material is required to be produced if subpoenaed. So the privilege is a bit stronger than confidentiality. And then continuing on with exemptions, Legislative Council has a grid that I think some of you have probably seen directly in connection with your public records requests, but that's also publicly available. And this is a grid of some of the most common exemptions that tend to apply to legislative records. Those of you who have gotten requests know that people often ask for your emails about certain subjects on certain dates, or ask for your calendars, that sort of thing. So with those kind of typical requests in mind, we did put together a grid of, you know, the type of record, the exemption, where it lives, kind of what to do. So that's what I got for you.
Further questions? So I guess one of the questions I have for you is, how difficult a task would it be to sort of unify that code so that it's more, all the exemptions are together in one place? Is that a reasonable thing to do?
Yes. However,
that's the one.
However,
I want to hear.
There are something like, I don't know, 500 exemptions from public records at least, and they're really in every single chapter of ORS. So it would require combing through all of the current law from basically beginning to end to determine what is actually an exemption, and then segregating it from a statute it might be embedded within. For example, there are a lot of statutes that talk about duties of boards, for example. And within the statutes that delineate duties of boards, it'll say something along the lines of, the board shall keep records, the records shall be confidential except, or something like that. So that counts as a public records exemption, and it's embedded in that statute, so we'd have to somehow segregate that from its board duties statute or call it out in a different statute. So it's, I mean, it's not an impossible task, but it would keep me really busy for a while. So
I understand. Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So next we have an informational meeting on boards and commission survey, and Adam is going to lead that one.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, as we talked about during our September meeting, there was a series of work done regarding boards and commissions and how best to sunset or look at reviewing those boards and commissions. Towards that end, you'll notice on OLIS an Excel spreadsheet as a meeting material. What we did is we took about 30 boards and commissions that hadn't met within the last roughly year and otherwise surveyed them, basically trying to determine if they had in fact met within the last year, and if so, what have they produced during that time. Out of the roughly 30 that we've surveyed, 6 actually responded to the survey, so 6 out of 30. In looking at that, we were able to, the survey, for example, went out on October 26th. It was closed on November 18th. During that time, those surveys were reminded 3 different times to complete the survey. So, as I said, out of the 36 actually did so. In looking in conjunction with the chair at those 6 respondents, out of the 30 surveyed, 2 were removed from the list of potential sunset targets, leaving us roughly 25 currently in blue on that Excel spreadsheet. Those are ones at the direction of the chair. The chair directed me to put together a LC request to sunset those 25 boards and commissions. At this time, the chair also reminded me to let the committee know that list may grow, that list may shrink, depending upon the actions in 2017 of this committee. But as of now, it's going to be the initial LC request, hopefully for the 2017 session. You'll also see currently up on OLIS we have a few LCs relating to review of state government regulatory agencies, relating to commissions, things of that nature that also start to get at this problem. And so that is currently where we stand with our boards and commissions survey results. Those results are also up on OLIS, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions about either the process or the end result products of the work so far.
Yes, Senator.
I was chatting before the meeting, and I could see why most of these probably would be on that list. Do we still have a school for the deaf?
Chair Riley, Senator Talbert, yes, we do.
And so eliminating a board of directors for that school would seem like a big step.
Chair Riley, Senator Talbert, I think this gets into kind of a series of policy questions for the future committee. The interesting, initially, the way this list was broken down as it's one of five topics. A board was either an advisory board, a governing board, a policy creation board, a licensure board, or an adjudicatory board. The board of directors for the School for the Deaf was viewed as an advisory board initially. It doesn't, the actual reports or otherwise advice of that board aren't currently in statute required for the continued operation of that board. It's a group of shared stakeholders that otherwise might be able to provide input. And to the best of my understanding, that board has not met since 2013. And kind of under the guidance of the chair, specifically looking at boards or commissions that have met within the last year, it didn't meet. It met the requirements for a potential sunset.
And you may be absolutely right, and one of the things we're going to try to determine during the session is, do we have the list right? And so, as Adam pointed out, this may grow, it may shrink, depending on what we discover when the boards hear that they're about to be sunset. If they hear.
Yeah.
Because many of these boards don't even have any members right now. And honestly, governors have been trying to whittle down this list for many years and have not done so because the legislature hasn't helped. And I wasn't asked by the governor to do this, but I think she'll be pleased. So.
I think it's good work. It just struck me that a board of directors usually has an official function, and that was the reason for my question.
And it may be true. Yes.
I think this is great work, and I really want to thank Adam for his hard work in getting this ready for us. And I absolutely support moving forward with this. I would say, frankly, I don't think it goes far enough. And I think the next job, if this committee continues in one form or another, I would certainly be supportive of starting to take a hard look at other boards and commissions about what they're, even the ones that are meeting, about what they're actually contributing and how much the state is paying for their existence and how much work, direct or indirect, goes into Mary Mueller's job with executive appointments, because there's an awful lot of slots that she has to fill every year.
Correct.
And we have to decide, is it really efficient and effective for the government's use time to be used in that way? Because I'm not a fan of boards and commission for boards and commission's sake. I'm certainly a fan of citizen engagement, and I think there are a lot of ways to accomplish that. But boards and commissions for the sake of boards and commissions, not so much.
Right.
Now, that being said, we had at the last committee meeting that we had in September, I looked through the entire list that you provided for us and didn't see a boatload where I was ready to say, yeah, that one should go away. However, a few years back, we merged a bunch of the smaller health licensing boards into one board. I think that was effective and safe, and we haven't had any problems with it. So maybe we need to look at doing the same. It's unclear to me why we have the landscapers separate from the construction contractors. I get that there are some specialty things of it, but frankly, I think the amount of overlap is probably pretty substantial.
I agree with that. In fact, we tried to do that very same thing, that particular two boards, in 2007. and failed. But those are the kind of things, and that work has already started. Thank you for that.
Great.
I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate your and Adam's work on this, and I'm eager to be supportive down the road. Because we got to clean this up.
Yes, it's a waste of
time and money.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much for that.
I'd also like to point out, Mr. Chair, that there are so many boards and commissions and agency meetings. You look at the public meetings website. As a member of the public, how would you even attend to 10% of them? Because there are so many meetings. You're just deluged. And so talking about public participation, I don't think there is public participation. There's a facade of public participation. In that the public is invited, but there's so many, it's just overwhelming. It's a deluge.
No, I think that's true, and it's sort of like too much transparency, as it were. Like you don't even know. It's like the information overload that we all deal with, right? So I agree with you, Senator Thatcher.
All right. So we'll move on. Now we're going to talk about a member bill preview that was to be determined. And I did get some member bills to include in our list, and we've put those on. I don't know that we need to discuss them in detail. They're on, or are they there now? They're on all lists. You're obviously free to look at them, but I. Unless someone wants to specifically go into these and talk about them, I think we can just move on to introduction.
Okay, you want me to just go ahead and introduce?
I have to open a work session, which I will do. Open a work session for bill introduction. So.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the following legislative concepts be introduced as committee bills and to speak to the bills or speak to the motion. Introduce LC 1189, dated December 1st, 2016, LC 1190, dated September 14th, 2016, LC 1191, dated October 25th, 2016, LC 2349, dated October 14th, 2016, LC 2546, dated November 7th, 2016, LC 2333, November 18th, 2016. LC 2354, dated October 14th, 2016. LC 2356, dated October 26th, 2016. LC 2351, dated November 7th, 2016. And the last one, LC 2346, dated November 7th, 2016.
So, Vice Chair Thatcher has moved the legislative concepts as recited be introduced as committee bills. Discussion, Senator Thatcher.
Thank you. Just reminding people that voting for this motion doesn't indicate support or rejection of the motion. It just gets into the hopper.
Any other discussion? Is there opposition? They are introduced. Thank you. So I believe that, and I'm going to close that work session. I believe that completes our agenda. Anything for the good of the committee? Thank you very much. The committee is closed. Committee is closed. Thank you very much.